Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Nick Linder back on the show. It's been a while since we've had Nick on, so we're just going to get a great update on some of Nick's recent fishing experiences and just talk about the content that he's producing. He's definitely been doing some really, really cool stuff lately, so some great updates and just some real fishy conversation in this. So let's get into it here. We've got Nick Linder. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property. Servicing the surrounding area for over 40 years, they've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their eye candy kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the eye candy kit. All right, dude, Nick Linder, it's been a piece since I had you on. I don't even know if I've had you on once or twice or whatever, but I think it was a while back for sure. So I'm excited to get, you know, just really just like a full update. If we just talk the fishing that you've been doing recently for this, the entire time here, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So that being said, dude, what is the update fishing wise this year? You've definitely been putting out some great content. You're just following your socials, a lot of pictures of big walleyes. What's the deal, man? What's the update? How has the season gone? What have been some of the interesting takeaways from the season this year? What are some of the just the fun things that are happening in your world as far as fishing goes, man? Go ahead.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. You are also putting out a lot of great content this year. I've been following along, and you've got a lot of really good guests and a lot of good conversations. And at the end of the day, there's not very many good fishing podcasts out there. There's getting to be more, but it's one of those things where it's like I've been listening to podcasts since I was, you know, like in high school, which was a really long time ago at this point. And at that point, I remember looking for fishing podcasts, and there was just nothing. So I just kind of quit looking for them, you know, for a long time. But now there's been a few that have popped up, and you definitely have a great one.
Yeah, we need more too, don't we? I mean, I feel like one thing is I've always been trying to advocate for that too, is like anybody that could have an interesting show, I think we need more of them. But anyways, yeah, man, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, no, I've been running around this last month. I guess we could maybe just talk about the last month. It's midsummer, chasing bigger fish out suspended, fishing local tournaments and stuff. We have some really tough local trails around home. And that what's cool about those tournaments is you're kind of forced to be really versatile because, you know, you don't know what lake the tournament's going to be on. So it's a random draw. and you have to go out and you have to figure out what's going on the lake. And not only that, but it's Minnesota rules. So it's two, or if you have a team of two, it's two over and then four under. So you can't just run around chasing big suspended fish, you know, out deep. You also have to find, you know, some of the smaller fish up shallow and stuff too. So I guess I've just been running around doing that. The bite has been a little bit tougher around home on some of the lakes. Some of the lakes are fishing good still, but we're definitely in the midsummer blues locally a little bit, you know, where it is a little more difficult. But to me, that's also the best training ground, you know, when the bite is tough and you have to kind of refine your presentations to catch more fish. And yeah, so that's what I've been doing around home, but I've also ran up to Rainy Lake a couple times this week. So probably actually over the last 7 days, I've had about 5 days up there and in two separate trips. So I went up with my buddy, Brett McComas, and TJ Erickson, and, we went up there for 4 days actually. And, did a bunch of fishing, caught some big fish. Rainy Lake is one of those secret gems, kind of, that's like, shouldn't be a secret because it's enormous and it's right next to Lake of the Woods, but it kind of gets, it definitely gets overshadowed by Lake of the Woods in that neck of the woods. And then I also ran up there one day, to shoot some Northland content with, Daniel Burt. I make a number of videos with Northland. So that's kind of part of what I do for my job to make a living. But yeah, I've kind of just been running around trying to catch big fish and, you know, try and just sort of refine some of the stuff, you know, that we've learned over the last few years. I kind of feel like one thing that's sort of changed so much of walleye fishing, and I think you've probably talked about it a little bit in previous podcasts, is forward facing sonar has just changed so much about what we know about walleyes and also how we can target them. But it's really just opened the eyes, you know, of what these fish are doing and, you know, the best ways to target them.
Yeah. You know, right there, I want to unpack a few things that you've already talked about, because I think they'll be fun and interesting with you. But right where you're at right there is, like, you were talking earlier about this time of year. And, you know, the lakes that you fish where we're kind of, you know, it's the dog days of summer. It's kind of the, you know, singing the summer blues and talking about a tough bite. I'm curious about defining that a little bit, because I feel like that is, we talk about tough bite all the time, but I feel like that needs to be almost, you know, we need some context there, because, you know, I was asking Dewey Jelm the same thing, like, out on the, you know, the Missouri River reservoirs, some of the tournaments in like early July, we talk tough bite, tough bite. Is that, you know, sometimes it's not tough bite, like we can't find the fish, we can find them, but they don't want to eat. And then other times, I feel like sometimes in some of the more classic Minnesota lakes, sometimes it's a tough bite, like you don't even know if you're around fish sometimes, right? Like there's places for them to hide because, you know, the weeds are there, the rocks, or sometimes you can't find the suspended fish. And forward sonar is a big contributor to how we define a tough bite, because
you know,
I guess I'm just kind of sort of curious, like, you know, defining that for yourself lately. Do you feel like your standards have changed a little bit where with forward sonar, you're finding fish, you're finding these suspended fish, you know, and then it just comes down to getting them to eat? Or maybe describe that tough bite for you a little bit.
Yeah, well, I would say, but pre-forward-facing sonar, I would say a tough bite would be maybe, you know, you're around some fish, or maybe you're out there and you're like, oh, there's just barely any fish out here. Like, where are they at? You know, like, are they sucked up into the weeds? Are they tight to bottom? You can't see them, whatever. So that was maybe a traditional definition, but I would say, like, today's definition, and it, I would say it's based on forward facing sonar, you know, the ability to use it is, I would say today's definition is these fish just will not bite. And that's something we will see. It's also relative too. It's also relative to the lake. So, some lakes you'll go and depending on how the lake lays out, a tough bite might be, well, there's just not very many fish around, you know? But some of the lakes around where I live, I would define a tough bite as in being, well, geez, I marked and threw at 200 walleyes and like one of them bit, you know? So it's all relative. You know, we went up to Rainy Lake and I think when we were up there, it would have been really considered a tough bite. And what that meant was we were able to go and catch, you know, a dozen fish, you know, with a few really nice big ones. Whereas like on a more standard bite, you know, the way we're fishing, you know, we could have went and caught many more than that, you know, 40, 50 plus fish. So it's really relative. Most of the lakes that I'm fishing on are stocked walleye lakes, kind of moderate size lakes. Not small lakes per se, but also not like leech lake size or anything like that. And yeah, a lot of these lakes have a lot of walleyes in them, you know, like the DNR and lake associations do good jobs of stocking, and there's plenty of fish in there and plenty of opportunity. But they're also very clear lakes and they're very highly pressured. And not only are they highly pressured, but they're highly pressured by anglers who are really, really good. And yeah, I mean, we fished out on Gull Lake, which is kind of a notorious lake. And you know, there's a ton of walleyes in Gull Lake, and you show up to Gull Lake at the right time. And it's, you know, like my buddy Brett McComas always says, sometimes you'll go to Gull Lake and you'll be like, I don't know why I ever fish any other lake. It's so good. Like that was so insane. We just went there for one of our local walleye leagues, and there's a bunch of really good anglers in there, including guys who are not only are they guides, but they're really good guides. And I think six of us even caught any fish during the tournament. So it was out of like 24 boats or whatever. And I think some of the guys who didn't catch fish are guys who, you know, guide out there all the time. So it's just one of those deals where it seems like you can always find the fish. But getting them to bite is kind of the big variable. And on some lakes that means catching some, and some lakes that means catching zero, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, man. I think that's an interesting and an educational conversation for anglers to have, is to kind of define that, you know, for themselves. Like, 'cause I think that like in content or, you know, just in casual conversations or seminars or whatever, you know, we can talk, you know, the term tough bite comes up, you know, at different times and, you know, for different species, different times of year, whatever. Tough bite is like a thing that is talked about. In fact, we should be talking about tough bites more than easy bites, right? Because if it's easy, anybody can do it, right? Like the tough bite conversations are the ones to have. But I think that defining the tough bite is definitely part of it, you know, just to kind of know where you're at with that. But with forward sonar, you've probably had some good catches, some memorable catches, or just the learnings of it, like we're talking about, like with a tough bite, you know, I mean, again, promoting your content, go on YouTube, watch Nick Linder's YouTube content, because you can learn a lot and you showcase some great stuff. But I want to talk about it here too a little bit, you know, talking about this time of year, talking about some of your recent fishing exploits, like with forward sonar, you feel like you got to be getting some bites that you probably weren't before, or you're learning some things, right, that we didn't know before. Talk a little bit about some of those things for you, just from your fishing experience, your fishing style, you know, some of the fun bites that you've gotten, you know, this year, this summer, you know, with what you've learned from forward sonar, with, you know, what it is like lure selection, where you're finding them, just kind of break that down a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's, there's sort of, a pattern that I would say a lot of people are starting to figure out. And that pattern is that bigger walleyes will suspend over deeper water in the summer. And that'll start at some point in June, you know, maybe depending on water temperatures or where you live, but it's usually going to be sometime in June, later in the month. And basically, you know, these fish are out over that deeper water chasing suspended bait fish, you know, whether that's little pods of shiners, or maybe there's Cisco or smelt in the lake you're fishing in, the lake you're fishing. One thing that I've had a lot of fun with this year is actually just exploring new lakes. So just going and looking at like the DNR lake finder, you know, in the state of Minnesota, we have, the DNR has like this lake finder system where you can go in and you can type in the name of the lake, and you can see the stocking information. You can see the survey data. You can see the notes that they made on the lake. You know, you can kind of look at a bunch of different things on there. But just looking at a number of different lakes in the area that seem as though they may hold bigger fish, and just kind of exploring those lakes and seeing if there are some bigger fish in there. And a lot of times there are, you know, and these are fisheries where in a lot of cases, I mean, in basically every case, you know, for what we're looking at, like they're stocked walleye fisheries. Sometimes they're just stocked by the lake association, there, but, we're able to target fish that we really weren't able to target before. So in a lot of cases, like the fish that we're catching are fish that you would have caught like trolling lead core or something like that. But in a lot of cases, there aren't a ton of fish in these lakes. So it really would have been a needle in a haystack with lead core. And now you're able to go to some of these lakes and catch two or three fish, in, you know, a handful of hours, and, you know, or the whole day or whatever it is, or zero fish, you never know.
Yep. But I think that's a great point that you make there. Like, I don't want to breeze over that like, sometimes what we're talking about here is just like one or two marquee fish catches can just make the day or make the trip. Like, it's, you know, it's, because it's a whole experience of like finding new fish, and it's usually a bigger bite. Like, I don't want to breeze over that point that, you know, it's you're learning a whole bunch to get some really, really cool individual bites.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the name of the game. I mean, basically you're monster hunting on these lakes that you normally wouldn't have fished, because in a lot of cases they're, you know, a weedy bass lake, you know, that someone decided they really wanted to have walleyes in their favorite lake, you know, so they went around with a hat, you know, and had some people on the lake, you know, throwing some money for some walleye stocking or whatever. So it's that kind of stuff, you know, where it's like, these aren't necessarily the lakes that everybody knows about or that anybody fishes walleyes on. But pretty much anywhere where there's been walleyes in there long enough, there are some bigger ones. In some cases they're a little untapped, but no matter what, I mean, just the ability to target them with forward facing sonar over, you know, in those suspended areas, it's a lot of fun. And you might go to a random little lake and catch a 28 incher and a 26 incher or something like that. But it's just always fun exploring new water and learning new things.
Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property. Servicing the surrounding area for over 40 years, they've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. Do you have like a real like sophisticated research strategy with your e-scouting, if you will, when you're selecting new water? Like, are you real specific on what you're looking for? Maybe it's a secret, maybe you don't want to share, but or is it just as simple as like going on and just looking for some stocking reports and you're willing to just take a chance on any new lake?
So some of the variables I will look at, I would say as a general rule, lakes that are stocked with fingerlings are better than lakes that are stocked with fry. For whatever reason, it seems like I'll find more bigger fish on those lakes. I would also say any lake where in the survey data there are any giant fish, you know, even if it's like one or two, that's a good sign. So if there's a 29 incher or a 30 incher in that survey data, you know, there's going to be some population of very large fish in there. And what else am I looking for? Lakes that have deep water, you know, fairly deep water. So, there might be a lake that's, you know, pretty small, but if it has a decent amount of water, that's 70, 80 feet deep or something like that, at least in my neck of the woods, you know, for the types of lakes we have around home, that's key. And the reason why that can be key is in a lot of cases, those lakes have Cisco in them. So lakes that have Cisco, lakes that have some bigger fish in the survey data, lakes that were stocked with fingerlings. And then another thing that's kind of been helpful too is like I've been using that new Onyx Fish app.
Yes. Well, in Minnesota specifically, right? I think that's all.
I guess in Minnesota, they only have it in Minnesota at the moment, and they're kind of pre-launch or whatever. So I've kind of been looking at it. It is on the App Store, but I guess they're pre-launch. So I think they have more stuff coming, but they do have all the survey data in it at the moment from the Minnesota DNR. And one thing that's nice, it's really easy to kind of sort through the data and find these lakes a little bit more quickly with their system. And another thing they've got on there is they actually have like the average length of the walleyes that were surveyed. So that also matters too. It's not like a law, you know, there can be big fish in lakes where the average length isn't that long. Sometimes those lakes can be really good, but a lot of times I'm finding if like the average length of the walleye in the lake that surveyed is like 18, 19, 20 inches, that tends to be a really good sign too.
Right on. Yeah. I find that, you know, that surveys, you know, it's such great information as anglers. I mean, people should, I just can't promote that kind of activity enough. It's like when we're not fishing, we want to be thinking about it. We want to be talking about it. We want to be doing stuff and getting good at looking up stocking reports and stuff is just a fun. It's like a fishing skill at this point for some people. It's like some people are just really, really good at it. They can just hound, you know, good fishing opportunities that way. Having conversations with, you know, state to state, like having conversations with the guys in Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, like one thing that I find interesting is like, you know, the state departments, when they're netting, when they're, you know, checking on their fish, like, you know, if you look at by design, you know, they're managing for fishing opportunities. And in most cases, like their nets, just like physically, like the nets are designed to catch like an eater size fish. You know, like they're looking for what's most prevalent in the system. And like the way they're designed, and these guys have told me this flat out, like a lot of times their nets are like, they won't hold a big fish. Like a big fish can swim into it. And then, you know, it's the netting isn't big enough to get them. And then they swim back out. And so like, so it's a really a disguised piece of information. So I feel like you're spot on. Like all the conversations I've had is spot on. Like if there's like any trace evidence that there's a big fish, like if they've ever found a big fish in their nets, like the probability is like obviously skyrockets from there as like the possibility of a fishable population of big fish. But even if they're not, you know, if the netting reports don't show really big fish, like you said, looking at some of those other indicators of just quality water, you know, the deep stuff, the forage base, like there's other things a guy can get good at looking at. Like everything you just said there, I think is key that like, even if you're not seeing like in the netting reports, like big fish, if all those other things are there, just realize that fact that like there's lots of reasons why there could be big fish there and they're not finding them in their nets.
Yeah, that's undoubtedly true. Well, and also to piggyback on what you just said too, I don't want to cut you off, but before we move on, one thing that's interesting, you said like, if there's any big fish, you know, that's a good sign, you know, you kind of echoed that. And one thing that's really interesting too, is we've always talked about with some of our buddies around the area that like to target burbot is, I mean, if there's one burbot in the survey data, then that lake might just be loaded with burbot, possibly.
Yeah.
Like that's a very, very good sign because a fish like that doesn't really show up in the survey data because like you'd mentioned, you know, the DNR is not necessarily trying to survey for those fish, you know, like mm-hmm. they want to get a general idea of what's in the lake. They want to get a wide sweeping thing. You know, if they wanted to go and target, you know, those bigger walleyes, so they wanted to go and target burbot, they would probably change their strategies up a little bit.
Totally.
But it's also just a matter of, you know, there's so many big walleyes in the lake, or excuse me, there's so many smaller walleyes in the lake, and there's not as many big walleyes, just, you know, as the pyramid would kind of suggest.
Right.
That, you know, it's like, and they're obviously not getting like 80% of the walleyes in these survey data. They're getting a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage.
Yeah, it's kind of a deal. It's kind of an optimistic way of looking at it. Like when I talk about that stuff, it's like, you know, it doesn't pigeonhole what the, you know, state departments are doing at all. It's like it they're doing the work and what they get is so valuable. But it's almost like I look at those things, you take them with a grain of salt, but in an optimistic kind of way, like look for the signs to be there. Like, I feel like the opportunities are probably more often than not. Like there's, you know, especially when you look at all the things we're talking about with you know, just the fishing industry and the modern day angler nowadays with good electronics and everybody's so good nowadays that, you know, gosh, you know, even if you challenged yourself to go to the lakes that, you know, basically where you're completely blind and there's no real like data driven reason to go there, there's still, you know, anglers that can go out there and have forward sonar, for example, you know, and can use it proficiently at all and have enough time. Like, man, I feel like the opportunities are probably more so than we can even, you know what I mean? Talk about. But
yeah, no, that's undoubtedly true. I'll also just throw in, like, my wife caught a 30-inch walleye a few weeks ago. And we were just fishing for bass with the kids and this lake was not stocked with walleyes, you know, I mean, they must've threw some money in a hat, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, 15 years ago and threw some fish in there, but there's no walleyes in any of the data, you know, and it's like netting data always has some of the walleyes in there, you know? So there might have been like 50 walleyes in the whole lake, you know, for all I know, maybe less.
That had to be an old fish too. Like just the way you say it, it's like,
oh yeah. Undoubtedly. But anyway, we can jump into the next subject here.
No, man, I love it though. I think it's good because I think this is kind of how I want to tie in, you know, getting sort of the updates and kind of your vibe of how you've been attacking your fishing lately and, you know, talking about all this stuff, like, you know, tying it into your content. I want to talk a little bit about your content and get a sort of an update on like your YouTube stuff and even just maybe a description on everything that you know have your hands involved in. I think it'd be, you know, just a cool update from you. But I definitely want to segue into some of the video content and the fishing that you've been doing lately, you know, and just kind of your fishing style and your content style and some of the decision making behind that. So anyways, mm-hmm. like just what is the update? What are you doing? Like, you know, from an industry standpoint, some of the things that you have your hands into, and just sort of the decision making behind the content that you've been producing lately.
Yeah, no, well, so basically what I do is sort of I've got a lot of things going on. I stay kind of busy. It's hard to kind of make a living in the fishing industry without doing a bunch of things ultimately. So I do make quite a few videos for Northland Fishing Tackle, and they pay me to do that. I make my own YouTube stuff as well. I do some other freelance work for different companies, and I also used to own a muskie fishing newsletter called Muskie Insider. So I actually just sold that a few months ago, and after I sold that, I decided I wanted to go significantly harder on my own YouTube content because that did free up some time for me to make more videos. And so that's kind of been the strategy. I've been trying to make tons and tons of content basically on walleye fishing this summer, and it's been pretty fun. It's been enjoyable. I have made quite a few videos, but basically the whole strategy with it is, you know, what is content that I feel like I would want to watch if I was, you know, just getting into walleye fishing, or maybe I walleye fished a lot but I wanted to catch more. Like I actually did a video up in Canada, the last video, and someone was like, "Oh man, you're up in Canada. Like, you don't need to overthink things. You know, it doesn't have to be that hard. You can just throw I caught one on a Bondi bait recently, and it was like, well, overthinking it is overthinking things is relative, because yes, anyone can catch some fish on some of those lakes. But everybody wants to catch more, right? And everybody wants to catch more than their buddy or whatever it is. So my thought process is just teaching people how to catch more, you know, because you can always do better. You can always catch more. You can always catch bigger. So I've been doing a number of different things, like breaking down different tactics, doing some locational stuff, kind of, you know, some seasonal content as well, you know, for people who are, you know, out fishing in the month of July or whatever. And I have also been doing some uncut videos as well, or raw, uncut, unedited, whatever, however you'd like to label that. Where basically I'll just turn on all my cameras, including, you know, a camera looking at me, a camera looking at, you know, my live scope so people can see what I see. And then also, sometimes I'll throw like a map on there too, zoomed in, so people can just have a general idea of the types of structure I'm fishing and whatnot. So I've been doing some of those videos too, where I've just kind of let the cameras run for a couple hours. And that's been getting a lot of good response too, of just people saying that they really enjoyed it and thought it was kind of insightful to see actually how things are happening as they're happening. Cause I mean, I fished with a lot of really, really, really good anglers. Like I've hopped in the boat with a bunch of great sticks, and you learn the absolute most when you are in the boat with those people, just watching them fish. So I think if you are like getting a guide trip or something, I think you can learn a lot from that. But ultimately those people are fishing in such a way that you will catch fish. But I think like if you can get in the boat with a good angler and just look over their shoulder and watch what they are doing for them to catch fish. I mean, I think that's going to be your fastest way to learn just kind of overall strategies of chasing walleyes. Yeah, I mean, and by the way, that's not like any knock on like a fishing guide. Like if you want to go out in the water and catch fish, you know, there's probably not a better way to do it than hire a guide who's dialed on the bite. But if you want to learn looking over someone's shoulder and saying, I'm not going to catch any fish, you know, while I'm in the boat today, or I'm not going to catch any fish while I'm watching this video, but I get to watch how they're targeting these fish. I think that's a really effective way to learn. And that's kind of what I've tried to do with some of this like unedited content. So it's been good. Those videos maybe don't get quite as many views as the polished ones. But they get three times as many comments of people saying that they enjoyed it.
Oh man, 100%. I would co-sign that all day long, you know, where, you know, that learning, seeing an angler in their natural habitat, you know, or like seeing them just doing their thing in the wild. I've said that to, you know, like the top tournament guys with, I know you'll be familiar with, like Hoyer's production, that tour level gold. Like,
yeah,
I've said that to those guys. Like, I know there's an entertainment value to that, of course. And like, it, bringing attention to, the tournament world and all that. And it's like the behind the scenes stuff is great, but like, one huge takeaway of that specific production and others like yours is like the footage that just shows the guys just doing their thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just the footage of seeing somebody at a high level, or it's just anybody that does it more than I do. Like, I'm just looking for, you know, just anybody that is out there that does it more than I do. Like, that's how I want to spend my free time when I can't fish, is like, if I'm going to learn, just watching somebody do it effectively, or just have like a good message behind it and can kind of articulate what's happening or what the, you know, breaking that hole down. I respect your stuff a lot. I love watching those videos. And, you know, if there's a few less people overall or a few less views overall, I would definitely imagine that it's way more effective and influential with the right, you know, the correct people are getting to it. I think that's absolutely true, and I totally appreciate what you've been doing. So I definitely wanted to highlight that and promote that. Anybody that's on a journey of learning new things and getting better. And then to call back, you know, like you're talking about your commenter, like, you know, you don't have to, you know, overthink Canadian walleyes, or you don't have to take yourself too seriously. Like, you know, one thing that I've appreciated about you is like, I love overthinking fishing. I love taking fishing way too seriously, but I definitely don't take myself too seriously. And I feel like that's true with like your content, and and you can watch some content, you know, there's a little bit of content out there, you know, in the nooks and crannies of the digital world where there are people taking themselves too seriously. And, you know, so I can get fatigued watching or listening to those individuals, but like, you know, exploring new ideas and just and overthinking fishing is a ton of fun. If we were in the boat together, we'd be laughing. We wouldn't be taking ourselves too seriously. But at the same time, you know, the competition with the fish to just see how interesting of a bait you can use to get a bite. And it just enhances the experience. It's like, man, we're all looking to have a super fun time. And you know what? If somebody just wants to go to Canada and catch, you know, fish, you know, with a frozen shiner behind a bottom bouncer, like for 4 days straight, you know, dawn till dusk, like that's cool. Like do that, get your hands on as many walleyes as you can. But, you know, like when you start to evolve as an angler, that's part of it. Like you get those graduations in your career where, and somebody like you, that's just, you fish so much, you know, it's a big part of your living. And I appreciate watching you not just do the same thing every single video for 2 hours, like, you know, talking about that experimentation or just having those theories of like, you know, this could be effective. And it's always an evolving conversation. Of course, we're going to talk about new baits all the time because the new baits come out, the new technologies, you know, trying to address, you know, what we can catch a fish on and a tough bite or whatever it is. Like, you should, you know, a Bondi bait, that's hilarious. But at the same time, it's like, what a cool idea, man. I wish I was there with you when it happened. Like, you know, that would have been a fun thing. So, yeah, man, take the fishing seriously, man. Don't let anybody stifle, you know, anybody listening out there. It's like, man, take fishing seriously. I love that. I love having a serious conversation about fishing, but at the end of the day, we're just going to laugh at ourselves with the failures because it's not about taking yourself too seriously. I think that would be my rebuttal to that commenter. But
yeah, no, I would agree. Another thing that I think is interesting too, one thing that I love about fishing is the fact that it can be whatever you want it to be. And one thing that really bums me out is when people are really critical of other people because maybe they fish a different way than someone else, or, you know, maybe they take things too seriously, or maybe they just like to drop an anchor and hang a shiner, you know? And like, the cool thing about fishing is like, have it be whatever you want to be. Like, I've had people ask me like, well, what do you think about like forward facing sonar and like tournaments and blah, blah, blah. Like, should you be able to use it? Whatever. And it's like, if a group of people get together and they want to do a tournament, they can just like make whatever rules they want, you know, like it, I don't have to have an opinion on it, you know, like yeah. If the PMTT wants to do a musky tournament and have no forward facing sonar because the people fishing it don't want to use forward facing sonar, like, well, that's fine. You know, like if that's their tournament, they can do whatever they want to do. You know, like if some group of walleye guys want to get together and do a tournament with no forward facing sonar, they can do that. If they want to do a tournament with no live bait, they can do that. Maybe, you know, there's a group of guys out there that, you know, don't believe you should be using live bait. It should be like bass fishing or whatever, you know. At the same time, you know, like I think it's great that some people can fish the ways that they want to fish and that other people can fish the ways that they want to fish. And ultimately, you know, you can take yourself really serious, or you can take what you're doing very seriously and overthink it. Or like sometimes I'll go out with my kids and we'll just take the boat out and I'll spot lock in a weed bed and I'll just tell them to cast in every direction and they'll catch, you know, bass every now and then, maybe a stray walleye, some crappies. And like, I'm not thinking about it too hard then. Right. I'm just right. Making sure the kids, you know, don't end up, you know, getting their baits stuck in the weeds and, you know, just that they have a good time just catching some random fish. So, it's one thing that's interesting. It's like the older we get, the more picky we get. It's got to be a walleye. It's got to be eater sized. It's got to be big. You know, it's got to be a musky. It can't be a pike or I'm going to be mad. Yeah. You know, like ultimately, you know, like that's all up to you. And, you know, if that's how you want to do it, that's fine with me. I don't feel like I have to control anyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dude. That is such solid points there. You know, and then you know, having kids will definitely humble you in that. What your last point there of like, you know, we all just, I think inherently you get to a point in your career where you got to check yourself that you're a little bit snobby. Like, you know, if the fish comes up and it's not the right species or the right size, you know, you're just like just a little bit let down. It's like, you know, taking your kids out and, you know, or just, or newbies or whatever it is. And getting back to your roots a little bit and relax on some of those expectations. You know, that has a lot of reward in it too, but I imagine, you know, just your point there too. One thing I like to do with a lot of these shows, if we are talking forward sonar, just everything that we learn from it. And even if you don't have it, if you took it out of your boat or in those situations where it's just not appropriate to have it in the water, or for anglers listening that just don't have it at all, there's still a ton of guy can learn for you in those situations where it's with your family or you just, you're fishing weeds or whatever it is. It's maybe, you know, less appropriate, from an efficiency standpoint or whatever it is to have it in the water. What are some things you feel like you've learned with forward sonar that help you a ton, even when you're not using it?
I would say things that I've learned where if I never put the transducer in the water ever again, I would say, first and foremost, I would say how the fish are setting up. So generally I'm finding fish in three different areas. When I say fish, I guess walleyes, if we're sticking to that subject. They're either going to be up on top of the weeds or in a lot of the lakes that I'm fishing. So a lot of these lakes are, you know, weed-based lakes, fairly clear. A lot of times they're either up on top of the weeds, they're right on the weed edge. So very, very specifically on the edge of the weeds, or they're out suspended. So I could go and I could target any of those fish without forward facing sonar, but watching them so often on forward facing sonar now, I have a really good feel for how they behave, specifically how they set up. One thing that's interesting is like when we used to lead core troll, and like, I'll admit, like, you know, I was never super good at that, you know, cause that was sort of, I was younger and just kind of learning things, and it's not like a presentation that I got super dialed into, by the time forward facing sonar came around. But I would say as a rule of thumb, like we were always setting our baits too deep. You know, at this point, it's like if I was targeting the suspended walleyes around the outside of structure, I would probably never even really use lead core. You know, I'd probably make a nice long cast and flatline troll, you know, my baits like 10 feet down below the surface or whatever, maybe put it on a board or something like that. But the way the walleye set up on weed lines is really interesting. You know, you have these fish that are all scattered out in open water on the outside, but on the weed lines, you almost will never find just random, you know, onesie twosies. Like pretty much anytime you find or catch a walleye on a weed line, there's going to be like a big giant pack of them. And if I was going out for lunch, I would go right to the weed line, or dinner, I should say. I'd go right to the weed line, and I would just cover water, fan casting until you finally encounter something. But then the big thing is they're always packed up so heavy that remember exactly where you casted and make that exact same cast a number of different times, because chances are you should be able to pick out a few more walleyes out of that pack. And then, yeah, the walleyes that are up on top of the weeds, like, you know, pre-forward facing sonar, you could see why some of the dudes who were winning tournaments were catching them trolling spinners, and not trolling spinners on the weed line, but trolling spinners over the tops of the weeds, over the tops of the cabbage. You can see why that was such a big tactic back in the day, because big walleyes just kind of hang out on top of the weeds, you know, like 10, 20, 50, 60 feet off the weed line. So yeah, those are a few of the things I would kind of take with me. I would still argue that fishing near the bottom is valid when you're like casting a jig or anything like that. Like you'll find a lot of fish are not on the bottom, but you will find that a lot of fish like to feed off of the bottom. So one thing that's really interesting, like fishing with Tom Wynn, is like when I'm in the boat with him, just looking over his shoulder, watching him do his deal. I mean, he's catching most of his fish off the bottom still, you know? And that's obviously going to change in different scenarios and, you know, different, you know, based on the different moods of the fish or whatever, but for the most part, still catching fish off the bottom. And I found, you know, you can dance that bait over the tops of the fish's head. Sometimes they'll take it, sometimes they won't. But a lot of times if you just drop it past them and let it get to the bottom, they'll eat it off the bottom as well, even if they're 5 feet off or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess those are a few. That's sort of my long-winded thoughts on the topic a little bit.
No, I think that's great stuff, you know, because, yeah, there's the barrier of entry with forward sonar, right, for a lot of people, the price tag or things like that, or if they just have a traditional sort of approach where it's just not in their total preference. But, you know, that doesn't mean that those anglers don't still want to learn about fishing or whatever. I feel like those have been some really productive conversations that I've had, and I love hearing that stuff. You know, and most people, you know, they have the side imaging, they have, you know, they have the other tools in the toolbox to either see fish or just identify those structural elements like weed lines, you know, in the summertime, like this time of year, where, you know, as long as you kind of have an idea what's going on there and you can target that weed line specifically and make a good cast to it where you're getting away from the boat, you know, is like, I think that is awesome conversation to have. And like, I know, you know, before I had forward sonar, that was my big takeaway. That was my big learning from it, where being in Jason's boat, when he had it, I just, I think I've said this before, but it's been a while, But before I had forward sonar in my boat just last year and this year, but you know, going back like 3-4 years ago, we filmed a show on Leech Lake with Dusty Minky, and we were using scout mode in the spring, right? It's like 1 or 2 weeks after opener, and the fish were on the flats and, you know, in that 7 to 10 feet of water, and they were really showing up on in scout mode with active target. Mm-hmm. And we found this super specific, just with the wind and water clarity that day in that spot, in that area, we found a very specific, a very defined distance away from the boat that those fish were detecting the boat, and, you know, how close we could get before they'd move. But also before they, you could almost tell that, you know, it was like that 42 to 45 foot mark was where they still didn't know you were there, or they didn't acknowledge you were there, and they would eat every time. But if you got sub 40 foot, they bit way, the, you know, the batting average of getting a bite was way less. And if you got within 30 feet, they were swimming away. Right. Mm-hmm. And just seeing that, you know, over the course of like a couple hundred fish that day, like just seeing that happen on there, like just being behind the camera, like I took that to my own fishing like a couple weeks later, fishing a northern Minnesota lake. And I was like, everything we do today, no matter what, we just have to be making long casts away from the boat. And it was like the best fishing experience I'd ever had in Minnesota. Like it was a massive learning curve for me even without it. And so, you know, I like making that point. I try to bridge that gap whenever I can in these conversations that, like, anybody listening to this, if they don't have forward sonar and they don't plan on getting it anytime soon, it's still, I think those are huge takeaways, you know, just things to consider. You know, light bulbs might be going off for different people for different reasons, but I definitely think you can get some fun fish catches and make some great memories, you know, just from those takeaways. Anyways, that was kind of why, but I like it. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it a ton.
I will add too, there was a day, like it was, I think it was a year. It was either one, it might've been the spring before last. So 2023, we were out one day fishing on Mille Lacs, and like the walleyes were eating, you know, like they were even eating plastics. It didn't even have to be a shiner, you know, in spring or whatever. But like they would not bite if the boat was within 55 feet of them. So you had to make like a 60 foot plus cast, and every single fish that we marked, even with perfect casts, you know, perfect jig placement, they would not bite if they were within 55 feet of the boat. So that's, like you said, that's another interesting thing that can be picked up. And anybody that's going to be watching content that just turn it off right away because they see forward facing sonar on it or whatever, like that's just a mistake. Like you should be trying to learn from everyone. And also, like, you should be, if you are really, really serious about this, like you should be following what the musky guys are doing. You should be following what the bass anglers are doing. Like you can pick up really good, interesting tidbits from all of those people. I mean, like right now in the bass fishing world, like there's an enormous push in towards like finesse presentations and, you know, smaller minnow profiles and stuff like that. And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in that world too. So pay attention to that as well, you know? So
have you felt yourself with different philosophy or preferences with your gear selection? Like, are you a little bit more picky with, you know, a longer rod to help you make a longer cast with a lighter jig, or, you know, your line selection, your leader, like, do you feel like you have some hard and fast preferences there?
Yeah, that's really tricky. So there's a lot going on there. So essentially, when I'm thinking about kind of my gear and how I'm doing things, I'm thinking, and like how I'm casting and stuff like that, I'm kind of trying to have some level of balance of trying to stay away from the fish, but also make very, very accurate casts, and also being able to present the bait in the best way to get bites. So like I fish a lot of tournaments with my buddy Brett McComas, and like a jig and a crawler is a very, very, staple presentation in walleye fishing today. And like a lot of guys, you know, a lot of tournaments are being won on that presentation. And, you know, people might say that they're catching fish on a few different things, but at the end of the day, you know, maybe they caught 90% of their fish on a jigging crawler or whatever. It's a huge tactic today. And like, I like to use an 1/8 ounce jig, you know, whenever I can, when I'm doing that, because you can really pop that bait right in front of the fish. You can hang it a lot better. And my buddy, Brett McComas, when we fish tournaments, like he's always using a 3/16 ounce jig. So the thing about that is like, you can actually cast a 3/16 ounce jig quite a bit easier than an 1/8, even though it's not really that much heavier. And then like, you know, I've talked to some guys who fish the tour and stuff. And like a lot of times those guys don't, some of those guys don't use less than a 1/4, you know? So it's all relative, you know, what they're gaining in castability. You know, they might be, they might be losing in presentation, you know, being able to kind of float that bait in front of them. But with that being said, there's a lot of other variables involved. Like you said, the length of your rod, the action of your rod, you know, a faster action that you can kind of whip that bait out there. If you're using a crawler, for instance, like one thing about that is just the fact that, you know, it's a piece of meat that's kind of precariously threaded onto a hook. So having like a really good keeper is important. But if you have that heavier jig and you're trying to cast it 80 feet, you know, the probability that you're going to rip it halfway off during the cast is a little bit higher than if you're just pitching it closer. And then, you know, some guys don't target fish unless they're 40 feet out, you know, and the reason for that is because you can make a very accurate cast. And, you know, if you look at that fish for a few extra moments and kind of analyze it before you make the cast, a lot of times you can kind of figure out which direction that fish is facing. So in that case, you know, sometimes being a little closer and being able to make a very accurate cast is more important than being farther away and having a less accurate cast, because sometimes it's more important to put it a few feet in front of them versus be in their general area but be far away. But there's a lot of things too. Like one thing that I'm kind of trying to refine a little bit, and I don't have a good answer for you guys yet, is some of the thoughts on just line choice. That's one thing that's maybe kind of the next frontier of just kind of refining these tactics a little bit, because ultimately, you know, for your main line, we're using braided line for the most part for a lot of these different tactics. You know, whether it's jigging a plastic, jigging a crawler, drop shot, whatever. But braided line is not, like, not all braided line is the same. You know, some of it has better castability, some of it has more or less water retention. There's different diameters and whatever. So just thinking about that a little bit more deeply, some of the companies are trying to come out with braided line that's way more castable. So just playing with some of those different variants of line. There's also been a little bit of a push in the bass fishing world, you know, where they've been using forward facing sonar and, you know, some of the smaller baits, and they're trying to hover baits in front of fish as well. And in a lot of cases, some of those guys have been experimenting with using heavier braid, you know, braid that is going to have a lot more water resistance. So that keeps the bait from kind of falling more. So that's something that I'm kind of thinking about a little bit, you know, but are you sacrificing castability? I don't know. I got to play with that more. That's something I got to experiment with a little bit. But in some ways, you know, maybe if I'm an 1/8 ounce guy, you know, and I like using 1/8 ounce jigs for the most part, maybe I can upsize to a 3/16 ounce and have the same ability to kind of dance that bait in front of a fish. If I just upsize my braid a little bit, you know, so I might gain more castability. And then the heavier braid will have more resistance, to kind of offset the heavier jig. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's such a deep topic, and I wish I could say like, I've switched to this braid and I like it for this reason, but this is something that I'm kind of like just starting to think about a little bit more right now.
Like I obsess over that sort of thing, because it's one of those topics that sort of leads to a buying decision. Then I get to go tackle shopping, you know, but it's, but yeah, no, everything you're saying there is so valid to me. Like I agreed, you know, all these conversations I have with the top guys, I love the little preferences that certain people have if they're really into a particular setup, because it just gives them confidence to be more versatile, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Everybody's got different opinions. I feel like you've definitely got a more objective look at it. A lot of people have strong opinions that they can, you know, they can fish versatily in certain, but, you know, all the things that you bring up. And when you were talking about making a long cast with like a quarter ounce or bigger jig, fishing a little derby earlier this year, you know, man, pre-fishing for a couple of days, I just was, you know, jigging a crawler. I was just gaining so much confidence. I was getting my cadence down. I was getting, you know, daytime bites, and I was just feeling like good getting into this tournament. And like the first 20 minutes of the tournament, I was so amped up, I cast it off like my first 10 crawlers. And I was like, man, you almost got to factor in your own, just your own excitement. You know, I was like, I didn't even think about that. I hadn't casted a crawler off all week. I thought I was blaming it on the crawlers. Like, this new box of crawlers must be mushy. Weaker or something. Yeah. Yeah. But I was like, I was just so amped up. I was just whipping that jig. I was like, oh man. So yeah, like all those things are a huge factor for sure when you're trying to make those more precise casts. I definitely think that there's a progression in any anglers. You know, when you get to that point where you're trying to refine things, you're spot on. I love those conversations. But no, man, I think that's a great talker, and definitely something that we should talk about in the future when you start dabbling in more of that kind of stuff. I'd love to revisit that topic with you and some of your findings, because yeah, I agree. I think that's a fun conversation to have, and I couldn't possibly co-sign any more, you know, paying attention. If you're in the walleye world, like kind of, you know, like we are here, this podcast, we're pretty walleye centric, right? I think that's easy to say. We definitely have more people mm-hmm. that are interested in hearing walleye stories, but me personally, I definitely pay attention to the bass content equally as much as I do walleye content, because I feel like it's a new frontier and those guys definitely have things figured out, fishing in heavy cover, for example, and just seeing how they fish and what they fish with. And, you know, make no mistake about it, these bass anglers, if they're fishing somewhere on a body of water where walleyes exist, it probably doesn't make their Facebook page. It might not even make their content so much, but they're catching walleyes. And, yeah, I look forward to having some good bass guys on here in the near future. Spoiler alert, I'm excited to have a couple of good bass dudes on to talk about that sort of stuff, and some of the good walleye catches that they've had that we should know more about. Because yeah, I agree with that 100%. And the musky guys, definitely, I can't have enough of those guys on, but it's tough, man, in content, you know, this is like between you and me, it's so tough. Cause like I could do a musky show, but it, you know, they just is so, you know, far less people, you know, care to listen to it. But I love that stuff, man. I obsess over it. I mean, it's, you know, I think that there's opportunities out there. We should all be a little more versatile, and we should, you know, that's definitely a thing that, you know, being a multi-species angler, I think some of those guys are, it definitely makes you a better angler if you're not just focused on one thing. You know, it's a little trickier for tournament anglers or whatever. Like they pay the bills to fish in one species, but the, you know, just as amateur anglers like me, you know, I definitely level up when I start focusing on other things and start realizing other things. Your perspective grows way. But anyways, that being said, man, dude, I really appreciate, really appreciate the time and the conversation. So much more stuff we could talk about, and we will hopefully here down the road. But that being said, dude, we can close this out. Timing is super good on this. Like always, just I would say anything that you want to promote, your socials, if somebody has any questions or wants to follow along, your content, where can people find you?
Yeah, no, if anybody does want to follow along, they can just punch my name into wherever place they might want to follow me, and they should be able to find me pretty quick. So Nick Linder on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. So yeah, that would be, I don't have anything too special to promote, but if you want to go there and follow along, you're more than welcome to.
There it is, man. There it is. I appreciate it.